Welcome to the Borderless Podcast, your guide to traveling, investing, and living beyond borders, where we talk about living the life that you want to live, where you want to live it.
All right, what's going on, everybody? Welcome to another Borderless Podcast. This is a pretty interesting one. I think that you'll enjoy it. I talked to Vincenzo Viamena, and he is a tax expert, an expat tax expert. I thought we had a really interesting talk, and the funny part about it is that after we spoke, actually decided to come down here and work with the team a little bit. So I'm down here in Medellin, Colombia, for a little bit less than a week. I just started here, looking around and sinking my teeth in. So far, I am liking what I'm seeing, and it's been really cool. So yeah, I'm with the online tax man team down here, and a lot of interesting stuff going on, and a lot of expats activity here. And so I will be letting you guys know about what I see down here, making some videos and stuff like that, and obviously recording podcasts. So that's kind of just an interesting thing. Done that a few times. This is kind of the thing that you can do nowadays when, you know, with the ease of travel, with the internet, you know, if you have networks. I wanted to come down to Medellin and so talked to him and said, hey, how about I, you know, can take a extended vacation there, help him out. He helps me out. And so again, getting paid to travel, learn new things, meet new people, and expand my network. So what else? Well, I am, you know, if you need any tax help, then let me know, since I am working with the team there. That would help me out. I can bring on new customers and things like that. So if you need help filing or opening a bank account, LLCs and stuff like that, then let me know about that. Also, definitely wanted to mention the new post that came out just a few days ago on Borderless. If you haven't seen it yet, maybe you weren't sure what it was about. I was talking about a IKEA chair. You said, what is this? Well, it's actually the journey of the sponsor of the show, Ian Bond. He's been helping out the show a lot, so please do go check that out. He talks about his journey, how he was able to secure his retirement through online businesses and et cetera, and also, you know, moving himself and lowering his budget and all that type of stuff. So definitely go check out. It's a long post. It explains his whole story. And right at the bottom, it gives you the option. There's a button there. Give me more information on retirement rehab. He has a program where he can help people who are in a similar situation that he was, or that, you know, that are now trying to transition. Maybe they don't have as much money as they thought they would in for their retirement. So please do go check that out. That'll help us out, help you out, and let's get Ian Bond going. Other than that, I just looked at the reviews, and there's not any reviews there. I don't know what's up with that. So go to reviews, iTunes, review the show so I can read it. Also, I wanted to mention, you know, I mentioned it in the last podcast, there's a lot more listeners to the podcast than there are people on my mailing list. So I need you to go to the mailing list, please. It's free. You get all the information, you know, everything that comes out with blog posts or videos, and that way we can keep in touch. And, you know, pretty much everything that I send out will go through the mailing list. And so no matter what happens with, say, the podcast stops or anything like that, or maybe Facebook goes down, who knows what will happen, I'll still have your email address so I can keep you updated on Borderless. Because it's all about using these different mediums and things like that. So, but still, I mean, I think that as far as decentralized and keeping people, you know, in the loop, your email address is still very relevant. And so, you know, I'd like to have your email address. I'm not going to spam you or anything. It's just free information about traveling, investing, and living beyond borders. So please go to borderlessblog.com, check it out, get on the mailing list. And so here we go. We're going to talk to Vincenzo Viamena, and I think that you'll really enjoy this one. So I'll talk to you later. Borderless. All right, everybody. Welcome to another Borderless Podcast. This is your host, James Guzman. And today I am joined on the line by Vincenzo Viamena, originally from New York, but he is now an expat tax accountant and runs his own company there, the Online Tax Man, which is based out of Medellin, but now he is joining us from Rio de Janeiro. So first of all, thanks for joining me, Vincenzo.
Yes, thank you for having me.
All right, what's going on? So you enjoying Rio there?
So Rio, the vibe here is excellent. I mean, like I was saying, it's Carnival. So even just the month of January and February, just pre-Carnival, post-Carnival festivities, shenanigans. So, I mean, it's just a great time to be in Rio for the summer.
Nice. Yeah, that's cool. I really got to get down there. I've just heard a lot of good stuff. I know that, you know, there has been some problems economically, maybe with safety or whatever in the coming years, but a lot of people still say that it's a great place to visit, and I've got some friends there, so.
Yeah, no, the vibe is great. Like I said, yeah, you mentioned, I mean, there's a little bit of crime, but as long as people are just generally aware of their surroundings and, you know, not walking late at night, like just the typical stuff for South America, you're fine. But yeah, you should come. It's awesome.
Great, great. So you're originally from New York, but now you're basically based out of Medellin, right?
Yeah, so that's the thing. I am mostly in Medellin. I mean, I was in Buenos Aires, Argentina for a few years. I was in Brazil, and now we're pretty much out of Medellin, and yeah, which has also just been a great place for us. You know, living there, et cetera, with me, my partners, and I have a whole team there, et cetera.
Cool. So you're originally from New York, and What made you want to, at what point did you decide to move your operation out there?
You know what? It really came down to the fact that when the crisis hit in, 2008, 2009, et cetera, you know, I was working in finance. I was at PwC for a while. I did finance, et cetera. And it wasn't, it just wasn't working out, right? I mean, everyone was losing their jobs. I didn't lose my job. But my role got, you know, kind of changed, and it wasn't what I wanted to do. And so I had a friend in Buenos Aires, and, you know, it was one of those sort of serendipitous moments, you know, that we all get in maybe a couple times in our lifetime. And I was like, listen, I got to get out of New York. You know, I broke up with the girlfriend. I quit the job. And I just literally moved down to Argentina to kind of learn Spanish and just see what happened. And, you know, I never looked back after that, honestly. I mean, I got down there. I had a friend down there, so got plugged into the expat community. I had the tax background, and then really quickly found out that there was such a need for people to get their taxes done. And fell in love with the city of Buenos Aires. I mean, if you've never been, it's a really vibrant city. It's kind of like the New York of South America. I mean, they call it the Paris of South America, and architecturally that's true, but vibe, it has a lot of stuff going on. I mean, it has the restaurants and the nightlife and theater and art, et cetera. So loved it, and went down there and ended up staying down there for a few years and built the business. And then, from there, we've like I said, I've kind of hopped around a little bit and expanded as far as building up a team and clientele, and yeah, here we are today. That was 7 years ago.
Yeah, that's cool. You know, I find it hard to put, you know, obviously there's you know, it's less expensive, right, in South America than it is in, especially in New York. But a lot of times I have a hard time putting my thumb on exactly what it is that, you know, it's just kind of like you were talking about, a vibe. But, you know, it's less expensive. I have more fun. I just kind of enjoy cities like that more. And, you know, I spent 6 months in the United States last year, and that was the first time in like 10 years. And, yeah, I don't know. It's hard for me to put my finger on what it is. I wonder if there's something that you know, that attracts you, or that maybe you've come to the realization that you like, you know, living or spending your time out there rather than New York, for instance.
You know what? I mean, I think, you know, first off, right, I think coming from New York, Argentina, Buenos Aires is like the place for me, meaning, you know, it had the big city feeling, right? Like, so for example, if I had gone from New York to Medellin, I don't think I would have had the same feelings, right? You know what I mean? Meaning Medellin is, you know, it's a city of 3 million people. It's kind of like a small town in a big city as far as the mentality. They're more of a, you know, country folk, if you will, rather than city folk. But my point being is that, yeah, you know, Medellin now for me is great. You know, I have a nice life there. I get to go mountain biking. you know, et cetera. So, you know, I think every, you know, I mean, the Rio is the beach, right? You know, people that want beaches, you know, Rio is great with the boardwalk and all that, right? So, I mean, it's always kind of whatever floats your boat. But I mean, to the original question, you know, leaving the United States, I think for me, the biggest thing is there's a sense of like just relaxation, you know what I mean? And especially in New York, New York is a rat race, I mean, through and through. And so even going to a big city in Buenos Aires, you know, it's big city stuff and big city, you know, vibe and mentality. But, you know, people are still there to enjoy life, you know, and people aren't spending their money on material things, right? The money that they have, they spend it on asados and having cookouts and buying good wine and good meat and, you know, enjoying it with their friends and their family, or maybe, you know, going out for dinner or drinks or to the club or whatever. But I think that's kind of what I've thought about South America, is at least South America. I mean, I could speak to it in Europe and other places, but is that, you know, the U.S. sometimes, and this has made us a world economic power, but, you know, we've always kind of had this sort of work first mentality. And a lot of other countries out there, it's more of like live first and work later. And, you know, I work very hard. And I think the lucky part about my business is it's super, super, you know, comes in waves and it's seasonal. So, you know, I get into my work hard mentality and I'm totally cool with, you know, pencils down for a few months and really, really working, you know, extremely long hours and weekends, et cetera. But then I'm able to just relax other months. And I just think that sometimes in the United States, it's really just all work, work, work. And I think for me, that's one of the biggest things that I've taken away from living abroad, you know, and people have to get used to it. You know, the service kind of sucks sometimes, or people take their time or, you know, overpromise and under deliver. But, you know, you take the good with the bad and everything. And so, yeah, I mean, that's kind of my thought on that.
Yeah. You know, I think one thing about it is that, you know, everybody in the United States is so indebted, whether it's, you know, with their college loans or their mortgages, their car loans and credit cards. And that's why everybody's working so hard and so stressed out, is because they're in debt up to their eyeballs. And you don't really have that in other countries because they don't have these insane, you know, low interest rates for so long. And so I think it has a lot to do with it.
I think you hit it. It's true. It's the indebtedness, but it's also, again, that material thing. And it's like, people want to overspend a little bit. Like, I need to get the nicer car. I need to get the 5-bedroom, even though I got 2 kids. You know what I mean? It's like, well, you don't need that. You're fine with a 3-bed. You know, it's just, it is this, but it's both those things. You're right.
Yeah, that's cool. I definitely got to get down there to Medellin. Sounds like there's a pretty big expat community down there. And so I'm sure you get lots of business. You know, I mean, you could just walk around and probably get, you know, as far as what you do.
No, totally. I mean, Medellin, I've been going to Medellin for 5 years, right? I mean, and kind of living there the last 3. And I mean, the community has just grown exponentially. And, you know, you see a lot of retirees. You've actually really seen, you know, you have the digital nomads, the younger generation, the millennials, et cetera. But then you've seen also a lot of families like moving down. Do you know what I mean? And it is a nice place. I mean, like I said, there's a lot of nature out there. Obviously, the cost of living is excellent. It's also, you know, 3 hours from Miami, so real easy to get back and cheap to get back. So, yeah, it's blown up. I mean, candidly, like, I mean, like I said, compared to like Argentina, Brazil, like I haven't seen those countries. In fact, I've seen those countries go downhill and back uphill and that. But Medellin has been something that's really, really, you know, boomed. With the expats and just people moving down. So it's been awesome.
Yeah, that's funny you mentioned that about the families, because there's been many people here. I've noticed that a lot lately, because I also help people move to San Miguel de Allende and things like that. So anyways, I've noticed that there's been several people, a lot of people coming down with the families, you know, that want to travel and some people doing this thing called world schooling. And
I know some people who do that. I actually have some clients that do that. So, yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah, I'm going to do a podcast on that pretty soon. A couple of people here that are pretty big. They're actually having a conference here. It's going to be like 300-400 people this year, a world schooling conference here. So
I got invited there. Yeah. I might even come by.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah, Miguel was great for that.
Yeah. So are you married? Are you single?
No, I have a girlfriend, so no kids, oh. So not really thinking about any schooling of that nature. I'm still trying to travel around.
Well, that's cool. No, I was asking because obviously, a lot of people when they think like Rio and Medellin, whatever, they think like, oh, you're a single guy, you're like having a great time out there, thought like beautiful women and everything.
No, totally. I mean, listen, I mean, that's certainly certainly an aspect of those places too, but yeah. I mean, just all about quality of life, and right. Good value, right? And these places have good value.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you on your website, so it's what's this onlinetaxman.com. You got a lot of interesting stuff here as far as your services. You got U.S. expat tax returns, cryptocurrency taxes, U.S. owned foreign corporations, back taxes, U.S. corporations and partnerships, foreign asset reporting, renouncing U.S. citizenship, non-resident tax returns. So, lots of different stuff that I think we could go into. Maybe we could talk about, it looks like you do cryptocurrencies on here. This has been something that, obviously this has been a big controversial type of issue some people love it, some people hate it, it's going down, it's going up, it's all crazy. You help people with that. And a whole nother aspect of that is how are these things going to be reported? Because there's tons of people that are, that have gotten gains or losses now, I guess, I don't know, but, and, how are they going to be, I think that most people are just like, screw it, I'm not reporting anything, right? But are they going to be able to get away with that? Or what's actually going to happen? So do you have that's a whole lot of different, I don't know if that's necessarily a question, but do you have any?
No, let's go into it. Let's dive in. The thing with crypto is that, so first off, the IRS has only released one thing on cryptocurrency in 2014, and their main guidance was really around the fact that crypto is considered property. So you could just consider basically like a stock, which means that when you hold it on for more than a year, it's long-term capital gain. When it's under a year, it's short-term capital gain. Long-term capital gain is more favorable at 15 to 23.8%. tax rate versus short term is at your ordinary income rate, right? But the point is that if you sell out of a crypto asset like a currency, and even if it's like selling from Bitcoin to Ethereum or getting rid of Bitcoin for an altcoin, it's a deemed sale, so you pay tax on that capital gain. So you don't have to, if you go convert into fiat. Or I'm sorry, if you do or don't convert into fiat, it doesn't matter. As long as you get out of a coin, or if you, pay somebody with the coin, et cetera, it's considered a sale. So, I mean, the biggest thing we've seen is that people have had a difficult time sort of tracking this. I mean, some of the exchanges are better than others. Obviously, some people know that Coinbase has been reporting to the IRS. So, long story short, I mean, the government's going to have its hands on this. So, my recommendation is to, obviously report it because it's going towards that, in that direction. And, really for people to keep good records, because unfortunately some of these exchanges aren't very good. I mean, there's some, programs out there like Bitcoin.tax that help people, with this record keeping, to calculate their gains, but it's a little bit of a nightmare sometimes dealing with people with crypto because they haven't really been able to keep good records. And, again, it's something that now, especially this year for 2017, there's been a lot of people that have obviously sold out, et cetera. So they do have to get taxed on those gains and they have to calculate that accordingly.
Right. And what do you think about this latest, there's a lot of people talking about this, trying to bring this up here. This latest crackdown, the BIS and all this, how do you think that's going to affect things or do you have an opinion on that?
I think Like I said, first off, I mean, there's not really any secrets anymore, right? Between the IRS and all the other governments, like everyone's, there's all this information being exchanged. You know, you have FATCA for the U.S. You have something called Common Reporting Standards for all the other countries. And it's it's not about, you know, quote unquote, you know, trying to hide anything. Right. I mean, I think it's just, you know, reporting it. And you have to report, you know, both your if you have it in a U.S. exchange, obviously you want to report those gains. But even if it's in a foreign exchange, you have to not only report those gains, but you even have to report those accounts, right? So that's, you know, something to consider even on your sort of your FBAR and your foreign bank account disclosures. So like I said, it's best to just report this stuff. The only other point that people, you know, commonly ask me is that, you know, there's this notion of like kind exchanges, right? So if they trade a Bitcoin for an altcoin, is it a like kind exchange? And, you know, do they have to pay capital gains tax? In my view, and really any other accountant I've ever talked to about this view, is that there is no such thing as like kind exchange for this asset class, if you will. So you do have to report that capital gain. So just to back up, a like kind exchange is if you trade one asset for another asset, you could defer the capital gain on that asset. So the classic example of a like kind, or otherwise known as 1031 exchange, is if you sell a house or an investment property for another investment property, you could trade a tax for that. So people are trying to do that with crypto, but my view and everyone else's view is that that's super aggressive, and that if the IRS catches it, they're not gonna like that. And part of the reason why it's aggressive is because you need to be a registered agent in order to even be considered for the like kind exchanges. And none of these exchanges are registered agents. So even by default, by technicality, it doesn't count. And again, I mean, even hypothetically, I don't agree with it. So that's just another aspect of this sort of cryptocurrency mess that the IRS hasn't, they haven't given out a whole lot of information other than what was released in 2014. I do believe they're going to release more, and yeah, they're going to try and regulate it more with like 1099Bs, like the stuff that we get for our brokerage accounts, et cetera. Because, like I said, it's just been a mess, and now it's obviously, you know, I think the IRS understands that crypto is here to stay, and so there will be more regulations coming. There will be more reporting requirements and even reporting requirements for the exchanges coming. And so, like I said, it's only a matter of time before it really gets locked down. So I would just start locking it down now, you know, and not be the person who just ignored it and gets caught later.
Right. Now, you mentioned FACTA. I used to cover a lot of stuff on FACTA, maybe like 4 years ago, 3 years ago, something like that. It was a big topic. It seems like it's just gone away now. Have things gotten better? I don't think so. It's just it's like accepted now, or has it been getting worse as far as Americans trying to open bank accounts overseas and all that? What's the status on that?
I mean, I think it's just kind of been accepted. I mean, there's definitely, I think, well, yeah, opening up bank accounts overseas, I think is definitely obviously gotten difficult, but I think it's almost like that's plateaued, right? Because the banks have accepted it, so they put in the.
Well, maybe I'm sorry. Maybe we should back up for those that don't understand. Can maybe just explain what FACTA is real quick?
Yeah, so FACTA essentially was a legislation which makes it for Americans to need to report their foreign assets, right? So that includes foreign bank accounts, includes foreign pensions, any sort of foreign financial assets. And this is something that went into effect, I think, years ago, right? I mean, I think when it was actually added on when Obama did one of the stimulus packages. You know, FACTA has been implemented over the last few years, right? Because banks have had to implement and get information from their U.S. account holders, all these foreign banks. So over the last few years, slowly but surely, banks have solicited W-9s from all their U.S. account holders. And yeah, it's been something that's essentially been implemented. So along with that, there have been some banks that have decided that it's not worth their compliance risk and costs to have U.S. account holders. And so they've just closed a lot of bank accounts of Americans. So that's been something that's been going on for a while. Yeah, I mean, it's still going on, yes. I mean, is it plateaued for sure, right? Because, again, everyone's kind of accepted that. And actually, you know, along with FATCA, there's been something that's called Common Reporting Standards, which is really the FATCA equivalent for the rest of the world. So now all the sovereign governments have said, oh, well, this is not the worst idea in the world. Let's find out where our citizens have their foreign bank accounts, who's hiding money where. And so they've wanted banks to report to these governments. So that's currently being implemented. And pretty much all of the countries have signed on, except this is the best part about it, except the only relevant country who hasn't signed on to FATCA has been the United States, right? Because so it's almost one of those things that the United States implemented this. But now you see a lot of foreign money that has actually been flowing into the United States because there's people that don't want to report their accounts to their governments, et cetera. So now you see a lot of foreigners have started, you know, doing structures to essentially not have to report to their foreign countries, et cetera. So the whole point is yeah, FATCA is here to stay. CRS is here to stay. Secrecy is gone. And, yeah, you know, might as well just sort of be in compliance and play, you know, play the game, you know, however you need to play it, so to speak.
Right. I always think it's, you know, funny, even today, you know, a lot of people that don't know what they're talking about, you know, they'll say, like, you know, when you talk about offshore, quote unquote, offshore banking or something, like, oh, you're going to go bury money, or, you know, that they're going to hide money or something like that. Like, it doesn't exist. You know what I mean? Like, you can't, there's no such thing as bear shares out in, you know, some place in Central America, or, you know, flying in with duffels of cash to some bank. Like, you can't do that anymore at all, you know, and people don't understand how controlled everything has gotten in the last, say, 10 years or something. I mean, it is completely controlled.
Yeah, no, it's, yeah, I mean, at this point, you just got to hide your money under the mattress.
Right. So, I, you know, I had some people write in asking. I did cover a little bit about the Trump tax thing, but this was before it was actually passed, so we weren't sure of the details. But we did talk about it a little bit in a past podcast, and I had some people write in specifically about how it affects this Puerto Rico Act 22 deal, where people can go there, and it's basically the only place you can go and not renounce your citizenship and get and like, you know, pay no federal income tax, I guess. So first of all, what do you think about this Puerto Rico Act 2022, and how does this Trump tax plan affect that?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think so the Trump tax plan did certainly put a you call it a dent, or you call it a huge changes as far as like some of this sort of offshore structures and even particularly with Puerto Rico, right? Because under the quote unquote, what's known as the GILTI tax, right? Which is now that, it's just funny pun that they named it. But it's for, you know, again, the fact that, you know, if you have your sort of offshore subsidiaries, you have to pay tax on that. It considered Puerto Rico a foreign country. And so if you're living in the United States and you know, set up a corporation and have a Puerto Rican sub, you're still going to have to pay U.S. tax on it. So long story short, it for the people that still want to live in the States but operate some sort of Puerto Rico entity, they're actually worse off because they have to pay U.S. tax and they have to pay the 4% to Puerto Rico. Now, if somebody wants to, yeah, go ahead and live in Puerto Rico and be a bona fide resident of Puerto Rico, then they still have the ability to save money and only pay the 4%. But yeah, you have to be basically a bona fide resident of Puerto Rico.
Okay, and how did the new tax changes affect that?
So that's not as much change. It's just that if you wanted to have the Puerto Rican company but not live in Puerto Rico and only do the whole 6 month in Puerto Rico, 6 month outside, then that aspect is no longer. The other, just because we're talking about just the whole Trump tax plan. I mean, the other aspect of the whole offshore tax strategy, right? For people that, let's say they don't want to live in Puerto Rico, they want to live in Thailand or Medellin or wherever, is the fact that you could, you know, set up an offshore structure where as long as you know, live outside the United States, manage your company from outside the United States, don't have a U.S. office, and don't have any sort of effectively connected income in the United States, you know, pay yourself a salary and get that excluded under the foreign income exclusion, which I'm sure you and your listeners might be aware of from previous podcasts, which allows $100,000 tax-free if you live abroad. So the old structure was essentially, if you had a foreign company, you could retain the profits abroad and not have to pay tax until you bring those profits back to the United States. And that's what Apple and Google's of the world were doing. So the Trump tax plan eliminated that provision. Okay. It said, no, you can't do that. And that's what this guilty tax is. Okay. So the new strategy is to kind of just do what Apple and Google are doing, which is have a U.S. C corp, right? Because if part of the Trump tax plan is the C corp, tax rate went down from 35% to 21%. So now just open up a U.S. C corp and now put your foreign subsidiaries underneath that C corp, and you're allowed to defer 50% of those earnings so that your effective tax rate becomes 10.5%. And so, you know, for all those people that have, you know, set up those offshore structures or thinking about setting up those offshore structures, again, the same fact pattern still applies. And, you know, you could still do it, but now you have to put a C corp on top of it. So it'd be a C corp and then foreign subsidiary. And then you have an effective tax rate of 10.5%.
All right, great. Since we were just talking about FACTA, I remember when this was, you know, hitting, everybody was talking about every, you know, month they were saying that it was, you know, there's more and more people renouncing and that kind of stuff. I see that you have on your website renouncing. Have you had a lot of people interested in that, or, you know, does that seem like there's been an uptick because of the FACTA and other types of things, or not so much?
Yeah, no, I mean, the renunciations are still coming. You know, I think that, you know, you have to understand, I think it's 10 million Americans abroad. Of however many million Americans are abroad, right? I think apparently only like 10% have really come through and started filing their taxes. So there's still a lot of people that haven't filed. And so I think there's more and more people that are kind of, as they see their friends, they see the news and, you know, FACA, yeah, it's still being implemented, et cetera. You know, people are, more and more people are renouncing. So, I mean, that statistic, I think, is going to keep on going up. I think that this quote unquote, you know, people see that secrecy is no longer available, or that, you know, the U.S. is kind of clamping down more and more. I think we'll continue to see the renunciation.
I think there's a lot of people that, you know, they like what they're hearing. They want to get involved into it, but maybe, you know, they're just, you know, they're working in the States. They're just now working on getting, you know, working remote or getting some sort of a side hustle or investment where they're getting some location independent income. How can somebody, you know, get started? How would you recommend, you know, what point that maybe they should get a residency somewhere else maybe, or incorporate somewhere else overseas, or how should they look at doing these types of structures?
Well, I mean, I think the biggest thing was with just the structures. And I mean, obviously, as you know, like just even doing it is kind of getting your foot wet as far as like living overseas, right? And, you know, whether it's kind of, I always say that really, you know, you're never going to really get a real feel for a place unless you live there for at least a month. And honestly, even that, like, you know, right when you get towards the end of that month, everything starts clicking. So I feel like, you know, by you know, having a couple places in mind, maybe even visiting first and then saying, okay, let me spend a month or a couple months there, you really kind of obviously start the expat process. And then, you know, by doing so, by being a formal expat, yeah, that's when obviously you want to look into residency. You know, you could do the offshore structures, because the thing is, doing an offshore structure, if you're not a considered an expat and you don't qualify for the foreign earned income exclusion, you're not basically living abroad for, you know, 9, 10, 11 months out of the year, the structure doesn't work. You can't save any taxes by having an offshore corporation if you live in the state. So I think the first thing is saying, okay, hey, I'm going to move abroad. Now, obviously, picking a good place to move is one thing, or maybe you want to just be nomadic, but at least it's having the commitment to not being in the States any longer, right? And kind of, again, being declared an expat. And then you could look into your residency options. You know, Colombia, for me, the residency is quite easy, right? You open up a company and you sponsor it, and you're done. You know, same thing with Panama. I mean, you could be permanent resident. You only have to go there for like one day out of the year. And so, you know, depending on where you quote unquote want to be resident and ultimately end up, we'll determine that. But I mean, some places are certainly easier than others, right? I mean, Portugal is really easy for Europe, Hungary. You know, I think Mexico is pretty easy, but you could speak to that more than I can. So, I mean, it's okay. Yeah. Get your residency and commit to living abroad. And then, you know, by doing so, then obviously you can open up your eyes to a ton of tax savings by, yeah, the foreign earned income exclusion and earning $100,000 and not subject to U.S. income tax, and eliminating state income tax for that matter by moving outside of your state if it's a taxable one. And then think about the offshore structures, et cetera, after that. But I think the first thing is really moving abroad and being committed to that this lifestyle. And then, of course, then from there, yeah, by doing proper tax planning, et cetera, you could certainly save a whole lot of money and not be liable for your U.S. tax, or at least minimizing that, optimizing that. Or and then also being aware of the local taxes too, right? And you know, if you're going to pick a place, what's the local tax rate and how are they enforced? Is there any way to optimize on that end too? And, you know, really trying to figure that side out too, because that's equally as important.
Right. So I know a lot of people like Panama because it's so easy. So Colombia is just as easy?
Colombia is easy. I mean, Panama, I think, is definitely by far the easiest. But I mean, Colombia, again, if you're going to live in Colombia, you know, it's very easy to, you know, first off, Colombia is visa free for 6 months, right? So, you know, you could go down there, you have 3 free months, and then that could be renewed by going into the immigration. So you get 6 months. If you want to be there for more than 6 months, then yeah, you have to get a visa, but that's quite easy. But the visa is not going to lead to permanent residency. I mean, unless you end up investing or whatnot. So it's all kind of about your goals, right? I mean, some people, they like Panama because they get the permanent resident really easily. And then that leads to a path for citizenship. You know, but again, it's kind of just about your goals. If you want to live, if you're looking for citizenship, et cetera, et cetera.
Okay. You know, I'm always interested in talking to people that, you know, obviously, when you're dealing with clients like this, you have to know the truth about, you know, the profitability of certain industries and what people are doing and stuff like that. So you get to see you get kind of inside knowledge on things. What is there any specific industries or skills, markets, whatever, ways that people are getting location independent income that you think are, you know, especially good, or something that you really see, you know, a big rush to, if people might be considering, how am I going to get this type of location, depending on how, what type of skills do I need? Is there anything that you see specifically like profitable nowadays?
Yeah, I mean, listen, I mean, I'm sure everyone's aware, like Amazon is obviously certainly the one that, you know, is blowing up. And I think, you know, with Amazon, you just have to do the proper research and figure out what would be really good products, and, you know, maybe hopefully get a mentor, or at least kind of figure out how to sell on Amazon. You know, so that's a big one. I mean, other than that, I mean, the people that kind of are in the service-based industry, you know, whether it's design or programming or, you know, or blogging, anything of that nature, people do. And then, you know, from there, it's just, yeah, I mean, again, even nowadays, you know, just remote jobs. I mean, again, there's a lot of employers that just let you work remotely now. And so really kind of going for that. And there's, you know, remote job websites, et cetera, you know, that have jobs available for people to work remotely, you know? And so, you know, yeah, you might need to, you know, get a pay cut, and I've certainly seen that, but again, I mean, for the tax savings and the cost of living savings, it ends up for sure working out, and even, you know, really saving money.
Yeah, that's cool. Is there any place maybe you know that people can go to find remote jobs? I know there's a lot of different websites, but is there anything that you found if somebody wants to do that?
I think there's remotejobs.com. I mean, you know what? I have a whole list, but, you know, I haven't really done a job search, so I have no. You know, luckily, the tax business is good, so I haven't had to look for any jobs, but there is a whole list. I mean, you know, maybe I could share it with you, and you could share with your listeners on, you know, kind of the posting for the podcast, just for people to have. Because I mean, yeah,
that'd be great if you know of anything.
I'll send you my list. I definitely have.
That's cool. So I want to maybe talk a little bit about like the general aspects of Medigene and stuff like that. People talk a lot about Medigene, and you know, now you've got your business. It's like, you know, you're a young guy. You set up this location-dependent business. It's given you a lot of freedom. Now you're down in Medellin. I mean, how is that? You know, like the difference between, like, say, the life in the city of your friends that you grew up with in New York between where you are now. And, you know, how is life in Medellin? How, you know, do you what aspects do you enjoy the most and that kind of stuff?
Yeah, totally. I mean, like I was saying before, I mean, I think Medellin in particular really is a really laid back, sort of city. I mean, it has everything, you know, it has good restaurants, it has, you know, good people, good nightlife and all that. But I mean, it is quite laid back. And like I said, it's really just blown up as far as the food scene, as far as stuff to do there. But it also offers a lot as far as, you know, again, hiking and going out, you know, enjoying nature, enjoying the wilderness. You know, there's not a beach there, but even, you know, travel within Colombia is very cheap. You know, there's a low cost airline there, so you could, you know, fly literally, you know, 30 to 60 or $70 round trip, you know, to go to like Cartagena or one of the beach towns or whatnot. So, I mean, Colombia, I think, is a great place as far as just exploring. And like I said, I mean, the people of Medellin are really lovely, helpful, nice, good people. And you know, it's like I said, I mean, there's a reason why it's blown up. I mean, there's perfect weather. You know, you mentioned the girls. I mean, there's so many things, right? That's exactly the reason why. You know, I mean, it is, you know, for the right person and for people, it's really have been a really nice a nice place with a nice quality of life. And so for me, I suppose it's been where I've settled. I mean, listen, I'm you know, I feel like I always have like a 3 or 4 year timeline on places, and then I like to move. So you know, Medellin's great for now. I mean, Portugal's been really nice. I went there last summer. Maybe I'll spend some more time in Portugal. And like, you know, as you kind of run in these sort of circles, there's always sort of, you know, the cool spots for people that are digital nomads, et cetera. And so, you know, there's obviously good reason why Medellin's one of them, and there's certainly more that have, you know, started appearing on the radar.
Yeah, and what would you say between the states? I mean, maybe New York is an extreme example, but kind of like the states in general, the cost of living between there and then where you're at, where, I'm sorry, Medellin.
I mean, I guess you could say, I mean, you want the rough cost of living, yeah, New York's outlier, but the rough cost of living, you know, you'd say it would be like a third of the price.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, it depends on, yeah, it obviously depends on where you, but just to kind of throw out some examples, you know, rent in Medellin, you know, again, if you want to get a roommate or share an apartment, and obviously depending on the city, but let's just say Poblado, which is kind of the nicer area, you know, you could pay, you know, $400 or $500 a month upwards of 1,000. And if you want to live in, you know, good neighborhoods, but, you know, let's say more middle class or upper middle class, not as like the touristy, I mean, touristy ones, you could do less, you know, you could do a couple hundred dollars. And so it, yeah, I mean, the cost of living is great. You know, there's a really good website. I don't know if you've ever heard of it, called expatistan.com. And that actually compares the cost of living of different cities around the world. And so it's a really good one for people that are trying to gauge cost of living, et cetera. Expatistan, yeah.
Yeah, there's also Numeo, right?
Oh, really?
Yeah, okay. There's another one that goes through, you know, all that. And, man, I can't remember. I'll have to try to remember. There's another one that everybody puts in all the different, you know, prices and stuff like that. And they have like real time stuff. So, anyways, there's lots of cool different resources online nowadays.
100%.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's cool, man. So, you know, let everybody know, is there anything other than, you know, you have your onlinetaxman.com. Is there, you know, anything else, maybe projects you're working on or something that you want to direct people to get more information about this kind of stuff?
Yeah. I mean, listen, everyone, if anyone's interested, they can go to the website and sign up for a consultation, which is free, you know, just to kind of get people, you know, get people's questions answered. Obviously, they could get a feel for us and the firm and whatnot. But I mean, like I said, if anyone has a question, they could always feel free to go to the website or email me. I could give you my email. And like I said, I'm happy to be a resource for your listeners. If, you know, people are looking to move abroad or already live abroad and have those sort of tax questions, right? Cause, you know, taxes is a big thing and it's something to think about. And it obviously hits your bottom line, so to speak, in saving money. Right. So, yeah, like I said, happy to be a resource for anyone that's listening out there and has any questions.
All right. Great. Vincenzo, thanks very much for joining me and let's keep in touch.
Yeah, man. Good hanging with you today.
All right. Take it easy.
Thanks for joining us for the Borderless Podcast, traveling, investing, and living beyond borders.